Hey there, everybody. It is April the 14th, 2010. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken, and I am flying solo tonight because Becca is down in New Jersey getting her education on. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay on WVEWLP 107.7 FM Brattleboro Community Radio. We are also broadcasting with pride worldwide on Q Nation FM and also check us out over on clickexposed.com. It's a lot of different places to check us out. And we're going to kick off tonight's show. It's a jam-packed show, and away we go. So on June 6th of this year, thousands of cyclists are going to gather from around the world in San Francisco for AIDS Life Cycle 9. They are going to set off on just the most incredible 545-mile journey to L.A., raising much-needed funds for the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation with every wheel revolution. But here's the thing. The cyclists are not the only ones on the ride. There's this whole other group. It's a shady consortium of underworlders calling themselves roadies, who creep around the ride. Apparently they're doing things. I don't know. Here to shed some light on this band of ne'er-do-wells is their leader, Kim Lembo, roadie coordinator for AIDS Life Cycle 9. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much, Ken.
So
tell the description of roadies.
Yeah, it's a shady bunch of ne'er-do-wells from what I understand. Tell everyone, what's a roadie? What are they about? What makes them tick?
Well, we'd have to have a couple of shows to get through all of that. What I can tell you in a nutshell is that a roadie is a volunteer worker for AIDS Life Cycle.
Okay.
It's a crew of about 530 folks who do all of the work necessary to support 2,500 cyclists getting down the highway there.
So they're doing things. They're not just lurking.
They're not just lurking. They are doing things in fabulous outfits and costumes, and they're hauling trash, and they're doing their recycling, and they're feeding the cyclists, and they're hydrating the cyclists, and there's a whole medical team and massage and chiropractic and sports medicine, all volunteers, all taking care of the cyclists and each other for that matter. Roadies are lifting gear bags and loading gear trucks, and they are setting up the tent grid in the camps, and they're driving in support vehicles called sweep vehicles. And if a cyclist, I don't know, gets a flat on the side of the road, let's say, and needs to just get to the next rest stop, a sweep vehicle will essentially sweep them. They'll pick them up, they'll load their bike, and take them to the next rest stop. It goes on and on and on and on. It's an enormous amount of work and jobs being filled.
And they fundraise too, do they not?
They do. Actually, roadies have raised about $1.4 million since ALC1.
Holy cow.
And I know. It's crazy, and it's humbling, actually. It's quite humbling. These folks are signing up. Essentially, mostly everybody is on their vacation. They're giving away a 7 days of vacation to come and work, and work seriously hard. I mean, it's not glamorous work. It sometimes really does come down to picking up garbage.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, they're fundraising. It's just amazing.
Now, of course, my loyal listeners, I say some of this in jest because people know that I actually was a roadie, Kim.
I know.
Last year, I was on the food service team, and this year I decided to take it a little bit easier and more relax and join up with the gear and tent roadie crew.
Right, exactly.
That's easy, right? Because I was told that'd be easier.
Yes, well, it is easier because, you know, really all you have to do is lift 200 gear bags twice a day onto a truck, and they're only 70 pounds.
Huh.
So, you know, it won't be too bad.
Yeah, that was not mentioned to me. I'm not going to lie to you. It didn't come up. I was told that I stand by the truck and point.
Right. Yes, there is that rule, but I think you have to trade off for that. I think on Wednesday you get to do that.
All right. Really looking forward to Wednesday right now. So what is this experience like for you, Kim Lembo, the roadie coordinator?
That's a very interesting question. Well, I was a roadie, so I'll preface my answer with I was a roadie 2 years in a row before I came on as staff. And, you know, it's overwhelming. I mean, it's completely overwhelming. This is my fourth year as staff and my sixth event, you know, just being in some capacity a participant. And it's overwhelming and it's humbling and it's mind-boggling and it's crazy and it's just the most motivating thing I think I've ever done other than my creative life. It just really motivates me to want to do more in the world, be better in the world, you know?
I want to talk about that because there, I talked about this after last year's ride and we had Lori Jean on the show, right? I think the week after the ride and we talked about the spirit on the ride, that there's this sense of community that's extraordinarily difficult to describe and to convey to people who haven't done it. I've tried to explain it to people by saying that I kept calling everyone hun on the ride, and I don't actually call people hun when I'm not on the ride. So that's my way of explaining it. And there's a real, for me, I should speak from the eye, Kim, there was a real dip after the ride, kind of going back into the real world. Is the spirit of the ride something that you think can be replicated, or is it something that is so specific to the ride that it makes the ride special?
Well, I think that it's yes to both. I think that it is when in the bubble, you know, when really, and as staff, we kind of get the luxury of being, it's 2 weeks in the bubble, right?
Right.
So, you're in the bubble, and things are what they are. I mean, a great example is what you said, you call people hun. Like, I'm a hugger, sort of. I'm, you know, an Italian girl from the East Coast. We do tend to hug, but I don't hug anywhere near what happens in the event where you're really, the human contact on this event is unlike any other piece of my world, certainly. So, yeah, the bubble has its energy and its excitement and its love and its patience and its community intention. I think pieces of that, especially if you continue to do this event, and there are people that have been doing this event since the car rides. Like, you know, I have a friend who's done 15.
Wow.
Like, the more you do it, I think the more, like any other big experience, the more it becomes a part of the everyday. You know, when I walk through the world now, I walk through the world with this experience of 6 years of being in this community.
Yeah.
So it's not a stretch to be out in the world being a little bit more patient, a little bit more open, a little bit more loving, trying to figure out what the common goal is of the situation, like understanding how to build community. I mean, I think that can be taken anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what is going on these days with HIV and AIDS-related funding, awareness? How are we doing?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this particular question. You know, it's rough out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really rough out there. The funding, there are a lot of people in need, right? There are a lot of nonprofits that are in line to get the money that they need to continue doing the good work that they're doing. HIV is, you know, 28, going on 29 years old, where we've been talking about this subject. And, you know, I think that there is a sense, or could be a sense, that it's not as important anymore. That there are drugs now. If you, if you test positive, it's fine. There are drugs. Well, you know, it's $25,000 a year,
right,
roughly, to live with HIV. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know an enormous amount of people who could do that on their own.
No.
Who could subsidize their own medical care on their own. So how is it out there? You know, it's rough, and it is a continual, like, bringing it up, stay in front, let people know that this is still happening, that HIV is still a huge issue. And it's an issue that is related to two things that people do a lot. People just do. People have sex, and people use drugs.
Yeah.
And these are just realities. And so, you know, we are in a continual conversation of trying to stay funded and trying to stay in front of local, state, and federal government and with our clients and their needs.
And it is my understanding that if some folks still are in that fundraising mode, they can still be a cyclist, can they not, on AIDS Life Cycle 9?
Oh, absolutely. If you want to be a cyclist this year, we would love for you to come on and come with us. It's a $3,000 minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say that the fundraising, I feel as though it is probably the least challenging part of it.
I agree.
I mean, certainly the training our bodies is really very important. But when we appeal to people's, when we tell people what we're doing and we do so honestly in our own perspective, you know, from our own perspective, I think people are very willing to donate and to help us with this cause.
I sent out one Facebook message and I sent out one email asking people to give $9, and within 2 weeks I had $1,750.
I know, Ken.
I didn't do anything. I felt like really guilty.
And I'm going to tell you, Ken, I use that. I'm just going to tell you right up front, I'm totally stealing your idea.
Awesome.
I have told that story to so many, you know, I do a lot of workshops and information meet and greets, and just got through the two roadie trainings in both cities, San Francisco and Los Angeles. And I brought that up both times because I think it's a brilliant, it's brilliant in a twofold way. First of all, it's a low amount of money. I mean, I can't think of anybody who can't give you $9.
Right.
And also, it's an opportunity to talk to more people about the needs for funding for HIV and AIDS.
That's my thing. I would so much rather get a ton of people giving a little bit amount of money than a few people giving what that would have added up to.
Absolutely.
So,
you know,
and
part of what this ride does as we go down the coast, as we are in these little tiny communities. I mean, some of the cities that we're in, or the towns or the villages that we're in, are literally one block long.
Right.
And here comes this ride with 3,000 gregarious, costumed, excited people that are doing this event to raise money for HIV. And this is a teaching moment as well. This
yeah.
is an opportunity to teach people that really we are all very much the same, and that we are all very, very much human and very much loving people. And I could go on and on.
I'm so excited to come back. I've been warming up my Huns. I've just been caught. I found that some people don't appreciate that, particularly my students, when I'm like, oh, what's wrong, hun? Yeah, they don't like that. It's not appropriate, Kim. It's not appropriate.
It's so sad. That's so sad. Everybody should love a hun.
There you go. I mean, the amount of times I said, oh, do you want some sauce with that, hun? And then that went in all kinds of directions. Yeah. Just want to put that out there. Now, I have it in my head, Kim, that you love going to work.
I have to say, I do actually kind of love going to work.
Yeah.
I never in a million years thought that that would be the case, but I do, and I particularly love this time of year. I have no time for anything else. It really is all about work for the next couple of months, but my God, I am surrounded by the most amazing human beings. How could I not love this?
You know it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The roadies appreciate you enormously, Kim Lembo. I know you work with an amazing team, but you do an amazing job.
Oh, Ken, thank you so much.
I am so looking forward to just pointing at the truck and telling people this is where they put their gear. Because that's the way.
Devin and Rob, that's what you're planning on.
I understood it to be that I'm pointing at a truck and that I'm going to be going on the vegetarian line because it's shorter. That's what I've learned.
Oh, I can't wait to tell Randy and Claire that.
That's what I've learned. Kim Lembo, an absolute treat having you on the show. By the way, where can folks go to learn more about AIDS Life Cycle?
They can go to www.aidslifecycle.org, and you can register right through that site. And we would love to have you come with us. Come with us. Everyone come with us.
Are there roadie positions available?
There are. There are definitely still roadie positions available. You know, it's kind of at a – I'm happy to have people call me or email me directly. Actually, email me at klembo@aidslifecycle.org, and I'm happy to have a dialogue with you about what's available and how we could have you be a part of things this summer.
Folks, please go learn more about this. I ended up wearing a Santa hat the whole week, and I'm still not exactly sure why. I'm still reconciling that. I was pretty low on costumes, so every theme night I felt it was, oh, it's cowboy night. Well, I'm cowboy Santa. It was pretty lame, Kim. It was lame. I'm amping it up for my gear intent, folks, this year.
Hey, I expect to be hunned all week long.
All week long.
You should expect to be hugged all week long.
Are there other Vermonters coming?
You know, offhand, I don't know. I think that there are, and I meant to, and it's my bad, I'm sorry. I meant to pull a list to see. I'm reasonably sure that there are a couple of Vermont cyclists. I don't know of another Vermont roadie, but I do know, I think that there are a couple of Vermont cyclists.
So what I hear you saying is that I am the Vermont roadie.
Woohoo! Not bad. It wouldn't matter anyway. You are the Vermont roadie. Come on, let's say it.
It's a resume builder, Kim Lembo. An absolute treat having you on the show. So excited to see you in just a few months.
Oh, Ken, thanks for doing the show, too. It's important. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Kim. All the best.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Odd month, odd year, odd day for a beginning. New world, same fear. How's he gonna fit in here? Brown hair, green eyes, but this one, he's special. He'll take his time and do his best to fit in here. And I can't help but wonder, was he made for something more than this? Was he made for something more than this old world and this old life provides? So much alone, so clear, he's seen that there's more to own than what it takes to fit in here. So keep close, stand by, watch those around him. They'll change his mind about the way to fit in here. And I can feel and wonder, was he made for something more than this? Was he made for something more? Was he made for something more than this old world and this old life provides? And he wonders how his life could look to the angels who guard him at night. Are they working for a worthy cause, or is he just a waste of their fight? Something more than this. Was he made for something more than this? Was he made for something more than this old world and this old life provides? Dig down, sit still, 'cause this could get messy, 'cause what would you kill to find a way to fit?
Love that. Love that song. That was More Than This by Phil Putnam, who's going to be calling in just a few. Thanks to Kim Lembo, roadie coordinator, ALC9, who just called in. Loved it. Little news for you. Throw some news at you. So this morning, this was hot off the presses this morning in New York City. The staff at the LGBT Community Center of New York City arrived at work on Wednesday to find that a rainbow flag that once flew in front of their building, it had been burned. How messed up is this? It had been burned. According to a press release, the police were called and investigators from the hate crimes unit and the center's local precinct were dispatched to the crime scene. quote, we at the center, this is from the executive director of the center, quote, we at the center will not stand for anyone who thinks that they can come into our community and try to intimidate us. We work hard to create a safe environment and provide a safe space for all LGBT New Yorkers. Hate and intolerance against us will not be accepted in New York, and it's so important that the center is a safe space in our city. And the call is out there for anyone who has information. They are urged to contact the police at 1-800-577-TIPS. So if you know anything about that, and all our best wishes to all the folks over at the LGBT Community Center in New York City who do just some of the most incredible work that I've ever seen done out there. It's a really committed, amazing group of people. Over in California, gay rights activists say that they have failed. They failed to qualify a measure that would repeal California's same-sex marriage ban for the November ballot. Restore Equality 2010 chairman Sean Bohack says that the volunteer-run group fell short of gathering the nearly 695,000 signatures needed to put the initiative ballot before voters. That was on Monday. Monday was the deadline. He said that Restore Equality's failed effort was undermined by the decision of more established gay rights groups not to participate in the campaign. So our hearts are out there to them, too, folks who are working really, really hard to repeal the work that was done out in California to ban gay marriage. So I'm going to play another song by Phil Putnam for everybody. Enjoy.
You sing, this is your voice. I play because you play, these are your hands. I dance because you dance, these are your feet. I am because you are, is your life. I am because you are. I breathe because you breathe in me. And my music does express your unbridled artistry. I am because you are. This is your life. Because you're scarred, this is your work. I'm saved because you died, this is your death. I rise because you rose, and sing this again. Understand that without you, I would not be. So sing in me a song that's free. And dance your dance of majesty, and play a tune and hum a verse. Release a sigh and admire your work, and let your love make your glory known. You regain breath and you moved a stone from heaven. Admire your work and let your love
Good stuff. Good stuff. That is I Am Because You Are by tonight's second guest of the night. It's a busy night over here on This Show Is So Gay, Phil Putnam. And with that, I would like to welcome Phil Putnam. Phil, are you there?
I am here.
Good. That's a good way to start. This show is so gay. This is a listener favorite. Singer-songwriter Phil Putnam bends piano-based pop rock around smart and stunning lyrics. With 7 albums out and an 8th on the way, as I said, we have so many listener requests for Phil Putnam. But he's not a favorite just for his music, but also for his videos. Phil's video for More Than This ran for a record-breaking 19 straight weeks on Logo's click list, finishing the year with the number 5 spot on the network's top 10 videos of 2009. His video for I'm No Prize hit number 1 on Logo's network. It remained on the chart for 21 consecutive weeks, never dropping below number 4, and broke the record for the longest consistently running video in Logo's history, which was set by, you guessed it, his previous video, More Than This. And I must say, he is one of the most prolific Facebookers out there on the World Wide Web. Phil Putnam, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
I don't even know what to say after an introduction like that.
Should we take a moment of silence? I say we jump right in.
Yeah, I say we jump right in. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be able to talk with you and your listeners.
We're thrilled to have you on the show. So, all right, first we got to talk about this Out Magazine article, where they declared Phil Putnam someone that we all need to know. How cool is that?
It was really amazing, you know, frankly, because I've been trying to get an out for years. And so, you know, because it was a nice achievement and a nice recognition, and it was just really good to be able to connect with a bunch of new people and share what was on my mind.
How did you find out that they were going to do a feature on you?
I actually know the writer.
Look at that.
You know, you mentioned Facebook in the intro. I actually connected with the writer on Facebook, because that's where I do all my damage. And we just kicked off a friendship, and it turned out that he actually already had one of my songs in his running mix on his iPod.
Okay.
So when I contacted him, he's like, "Hey, I actually know, you know, I know who you are, and I know your music," and I was really flattered. So he said, "You know, I've already talked to my editor, and they said we've got the green light, so let's do it."
Look at that. All right, I clearly need to start updating my status on Facebook, and then apparently get an Out Magazine.
Yeah, Facebook's for a wonder, let me tell you.
Who knew? Who knew? All right, we gotta talk about some of the pieces of this article, though, because I'm gonna read a big old Phil Putnam block quote.
Got it.
Okay, you just gotta hang out while I read things that you actually said. It's a little weird.
Good time.
So this is from Phil Putnam. He said, "I was that fat girly kid in middle school, and I really needed a friend group. That's what it came down to. So I joined the choir and my church choir, and that really gave me the sense of community that I needed. The church gave me the strength of character. People don't think that the church being capable of original thought, but because I didn't grow up in a religious family, I had to sort everything out for myself, so it really had a big impact on my life." What about, and I don't know, did you read the comments section on this article?
I haven't in a few weeks.
Okay.
I'll have to refresh my memory.
Well, it was a really interesting, it spurred some great dialogue about what is the intersection between being able to maintain some sort of faith-based identity and being gay, and Phil Putnam putting it out there saying these two things are not mutually exclusive.
You know, and I definitely feel that way, only because that's been my experience. And also I know a bunch of people that have kind of carved out the same experience for themselves. You know, I do not think that loving God or your idea of God and loving people of the same gender are an anathema. And, you know, I won't lie, and this is incredibly difficult to make that transition. And about the year after I fully came out, it was very disorienting.
Yeah.
But it wasn't disorienting for the reasons that you would think. It wasn't because I felt that God didn't love me because I was gay, which is what I've been told for so many years. It was the fact that I knew he did.
Right.
He was still with me like he was all the time. So it was more disorienting to have an experience that I was told wouldn't happen at all, even though it was a very positive experience.
It was really great that you put that out there for folks to see, though, because I think it affected quite a few people who struggle, and particularly these days, folks who are struggling to maintain both a faith-based identity and sexual orientation of just being an out gay man. So
I try to have as, I try to have as few barriers as possible between who I am in everyday life and who I am in my music career. And that's one of the joys of it, is that I get to connect with people who have had similar experiences or find some kind of inspiration for what they're going through. And, you know, it was interesting. When I was living in Sacramento, California, which is my hometown, I would play at a gay club downtown in downtown Sacramento. And I would play my songs, a lot of which have spiritual-type content. And after every single show in this gay bar, I would just sit around and talk with these guys and these gals that, you know, had faith-based experiences in their childhood or even in their adult years, and they never felt like somebody was out there singing their songs and talking about an experience of having both comfortably, you know, in the same life. So it was interesting. I talked about God probably more in a gay bar than I ever did in the church.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know.
That's a song in itself.
Yeah, and even it's the freedom to let yourself struggle. You know, I would even say that I'm probably still in a place of spiritual struggle right now. It's not as much a part of my life as it used to be or as much a part of my music, but it's still very much there. And I'm still, you know, figuring out what place it's going to hold in my future and in my day-to-day. But I think that's life. I don't think that that's something you try to get through so you can stop struggling. I think the struggle is where the growth is.
Look at that. And some songs, some pretty cool songs come out of that struggle.
Been a journey, that's for sure.
Now, I have to say, I don't want to critique the writer because I'm really looking forward to the piece that he's going to write on our radio show, but one of the questions that he asked, the question quote was, you have a really big gay following, but your music doesn't really have a very stereotypically gay sensibility. That threw me off a little bit. How did you take that in when you received that question of, all right, so how do I categorize what a gay sensibility is?
You know, I think what he was referring to was the typical samba techno dance music.
Mm-hmm.
What's associated with, you know, going to the club and dancing the night away. So, and in that case, he's correct. My music does not fit that style of quote-unquote gay music. But also, you know, I'm not a huge subscriber to the term of gay music beyond marketing purposes. I mean, you got to know what to call it so people know what kind of genre it fits into. But, you know, I think gay music in the general sense is somebody who's gay writing music.
There you go.
That's really how I look at it.
Are you saying that you would like someone to do some sort of techno remix of one of your songs?
If it's well done, yeah. I'm not, you know, some of my songs are, actually my producer, Steve Wallace, who produced Casualties, we've worked on some different remixes of songs from Casualties. So there are actually some things in the works. And some songs totally don't work at all, you know, and some are a fantastic fit. And I don't know if they're going to be released or not, but it was really fun to hear my music in a very different context. And also, you know, I require a very high level of intelligence from everything that I do and everybody that works with me. I mean, so you're gonna have to make great intuitive music if it's going to come from me. And so with these remixes, it again, wasn't the typical, you know, dance club stuff, two chords, same four on the four beat. It was a lot more kind of comparable to what you call intelligent dance music or IDM.
Right.
Which is a genre that's out there. And it was just really, really fun to hear some different things that came out of the studio.
But what I hear you saying is you're looking forward to the day that someone comes up to you and says, oh my gosh, I totally ripped off my shirt and sweated it up to your song in the dance club.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I sure hope so. You know, if your music doesn't make people take their clothes off, then what's the point?
Dream big, Phil. I say you dream big. That's a good one. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you, sir, have a passion for the cabaret scene, do you not?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You know, it comes down to the Duplex in the West Village in New York City. There is my good friend Ben Cameron, he hosts an event there every Friday night called Mostly Sondheim.
Yep.
And it's just a big open mic cabaret night. Now, of course, you know, it usually gets until about 3 a.m. until a Sondheim song is sung.
If even then.
Yeah. So you've been?
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Okay, so now don't tell anyone, even though I know we're live on the air. I actually used to work at the Duplex.
Shut up.
I know.
And when?
I used to work at a place called the Five Oaks, which was renamed the Oaks, and this was in the late 90s as I was paying my way through NYU, and it was owned by the same folks at the Duplex, and some of us used to float over to the Duplex.
Yep, it's probably my favorite hangout place in New York.
Me and my buddy Brian Nash, I'm telling you.
Brian, yep, he's the house pianist there at Mostly Sondheim.
Yes, he is. Tell everyone, because there are a lot of different places. We talk a lot on this show just about the different pieces of gay culture that a lot of this country don't actually get to see because of geographically where they are. What piece of the puzzle is the cabaret scene? What are people missing if they don't have a cabaret scene in their lives?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of the gay music icons of today, specifically the females, they take a lot of their cues from the women who ruled the cabaret scene from the early 70s on up to the mid-90s. And that would be either the cabaret scene in New York City or the scene in San Francisco. And, of course, all those women copied Liza.
Oh, you know, well, of course.
A long time. But I'm talking about Nancy Lamott and, you know, and Karen Mason and Lucy Arnaz even. And all these women who really defined the cabaret generation, you see different stylizations and different character pieces and different costume effects in everybody from Lady Gaga, Christina Aguilera to, I mean, you name a pop diva today who's under 25 or 30 and you can peg something of them to the cabaret scene. And I think there's also an intimacy and a conversational aspect that is very strong in the cabaret scene. And plus, it's just so gay. It's just so gay, and there's a very strong connection to musical theater. But I think it's a place where a lot of actors and musical theater performers can come to sing songs they don't normally get to do in the musical theater canon. So there's a very strong draw there, and it's just very loose and very fun. And I also see some of the best talent I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was not me.
Cabaret clubs.
Yeah.
Now, would you perform? Were you one of the performing employees?
I was. Suddenly Seymour, five nights a week.
There you go.
Sometimes I even got to be Seymour. Those were special nights for me.
That's great.
That was a really special time for me. No, my specialty, I had a Lean On Me number with flashcards. That was my thing.
With flashcards?
Yes. We handed out the flashcards, and when it got to your lyric in the chorus, you stood up. You know, Phil, really anything to mask my singing ability, I think, worked out well.
So alcohol.
copious amounts. Should our listeners be over 21 years old in a country that allows that? Just want to put that out there. Now, you have been very open and intentional in working towards gay equality, particularly your support back in 2008 of the No on Prop 8 campaign. What sense of responsibility, or do you feel a sense of responsibility as an artist to lend your voice to a movement?
Absolutely. I absolutely think it's our responsibility. I mean, if you have a voice, you need to use it. Period.
There you go.
And I think if you don't, you're lazy and you're wasteful and you're in the way.
Okay. So we have that first part, and then we just went to that second level, which is where Phil Putnam just took us to.
That's just it. If you have a voice, you should use it. And if you're not, get out of my way.
There. What's got you fired up these days?
Well, still gay marriage. Absolutely. I think that there's no legal justification for it, and for the discrimination against it. I mean, I'm definitely in favor of gay marriage. So I think that that's a big issue. I want to improve the quality of people's day-to-day gay life. You know, there's the legislation level. There's the national, there's the national movement as well. But then there's also the person, in the town and whatever state of this country that can't keep their job because they're gay. Or they can't express any kind of physical affection to their boyfriend or girlfriend on the street because of the culture around them. I really want to affect the day-to-day culture of our world. And so, I mean, you just do it every way. And, you know, living in New York, it's easy to forget because here in the pockets of New York that I'm in, it's pretty common to see two men walking down the street holding hands.
Absolutely.
Kissing on a street corner. So I really make sure that I stay mindful of the way that it is for, I think it's still 32 states in the country, you can get fired from your job with no recourse for being gay.
Yeah, and as someone who lives in Vermont, you just get lulled into this, oh, everything's great. And it's hard to remember, actually, this is not the norm.
Exactly. And so I think also, the potential that there is with repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell is really exciting. I hope that, it sort of rebounds from the hits it's taken in the last couple of weeks
right.
And really keeps going. And I just, I really want to see those significant changes happen, because I think it's that house of cards, you know, and once those two huge things happen, Don't Ask, Don't Tell and gay marriage, it's just the rate of change, the amount of time it takes for it to happen will significantly change.
We're all going to, as soon as it changes, we're going to the dance club and dancing to Phil Putnam music.
Exactly.
That's
what
I say.
You're taking off your shirts and you're celebrating gay marriage, and then you're going to go and enlist in the army.
I'm doing it right now.
You know?
Now is the time of the show for the Learning Annex with Phil Putnam. Phil, how do our listeners get their ideas from their head to the music on the page? How do we get that song that's burning inside of us, out of us, onto the page?
Well, you know, it may sound a little counterintuitive, but when I want to write, one of the things I do is read.
Okay.
Read incessantly, and that really fuels my writing process a lot. I think that it's creativity in, creativity out. So if you want to have creative output, take creative intake. That's a big part of it. I think learning an instrument can be extremely, extremely helpful, especially piano. Piano is a little easier to understand than guitar because it's two-dimensional, mm-hmm. rather than the fretboard on the guitar being three-dimensional. As far as you know, a guitar, it's up and down and left and right. As far as the number of places where you can put wrong notes, you know, the number of mistakes you make, you can make them on all directions on the guitar.
It's yeah. maximizing. It's really a maximizing opportunity.
Exactly. On the piano, you can just make them left and right.
Yes.
So that's comforting. So, you know, but knowing the instrument is very helpful. But I think that, you know, what I'm really experiencing in my writing right now is a new phase for me. I mean, about every two albums, my writing process decides to just completely reinvent itself, unbeknownst to me. So then I've got to figure out, you know, again, how I'm gonna write that music. And I think being vigilant and being a real servant of the work is something that I'm having to recommit to. I got a little lazy. You know, I'd get an idea and I wouldn't write it down, or I wouldn't jot it down on my iPhone. And that's new for me, by the way. I'm such a stickler for, no, the lyrics have to be written by hand in my notebook, you know, with a pen the first time. I resisted so strongly using my laptop or my iPhone to jot down ideas. But I spend so much time away from home each day now that it was no longer working. So I finally gave in, typing little notes on my iPhone. And, gosh, I've probably written half my next album on my iPhone.
Look at that.
So, you know, I think it's about letting go of, you know, no, this is how I write music. This is it. And really allowing, okay, look at your life now. If you spend time on the subway, if you spend time in the car, you know, whatever it is, if you want to get that idea out, get it out right then and find a way that works for you.
That is the Learning Annex with Phil Putnam. All right, now we got to talk specifically about some of your music. Can we talk about some of your music?
Of course.
Okay. So this is the part where you need to tell our listening audience. I'm going to give you some Phil Putnam song names, and you are going to tell our listening audience what these songs say about Phil Putnam.
Okay.
A little psychoanalysis.
So not what the song is about, but what it tells you about me?
We could care less what the song is about. We want to know what it says about Phil Putnam.
Oh, I just love people that want to know about me.
Oh. Well, then this is good. We're gonna. So the first, it's gonna work out well. The first song that we played tonight. I love how I say we as if my co-host is here. She's not here. It's just me. The first song we played tonight is the crowd favorite. More Than This. What does More Than This say about Phil Putnam?
That junior high was horrible.
There you go.
That's what that song says.
I have to tell you, that was almost exactly the same answer that Amy Ray had last week about one of her songs. So
really?
we're seeing a little bit of consistency in our singer-songwriters.
Hold on. Did you just say Amy Ray?
Amy Ray was
Indigo Girls fame?
On our show last Wednesday.
I am following Amy Ray. Are you kidding me?
The natural progression in the singer-songwriter world is Amy Ray, Arrow, Phil Putnam.
Oh, my God. I'm having a moment right now. Oh, my Lord. I am so humbled in simply the wake of Amy Ray.
Look at that.
God bless her. God, I love those Indigo Girls. God love them.
Favorite Indigo Girls song?
This is going to sound a little weird. Prince of Darkness.
Okay, we're going to move on from that. So what does... Just moving on quickly.
It is a very uplifting song with a misleading title. Just Like Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. is actually a very hopeful, uplifting song.
Someone's on the bathroom floor doing her cocaine, Phil Putnam.
And I will not be a pawn for the Prince of Darkness any longer.
Yeah, okay. So what does I am because... What does I am because you are say about Phil Putnam?
It's really about my value of humility.
Okay.
That is something that I think is incredibly crucial to keep yourself in kind of know where you stay in the cosmic scheme of things and stay humble. And that's something that I, you know, always strive for.
Look at that. See, we don't care what the song's about. This is what it says about Phil Putnam.
Exactly.
This is good stuff. And I'm going to make you do one more. And this, I have to tell you, it's my favorite song. This is my favorite song of yours. What does Best of Intentions say about Phil Putnam?
That if you have a bad date with me, I'm going to write a song about it, and it's going to sound like that.
Wow, I have so many comments. I'm really having a hard time choosing one.
There's a story there. Can I tell a story there?
Tell the story.
Okay. Well, Best of Intentions was partially inspired by a bad date.
And please use names.
No, I can't.
Okay.
But it was Taylor Swift. So, you know, just dishing out her own medicine to her.
All good.
It's a very good guy. I mean, incredible musician, but he was just a perfectionist. And I think perfectionism is just the biggest, most useless waste of time. And it's completely impossible, first of all, and even if it was possible, I wouldn't want it. I think our brokenness and our flaws and our inconsistencies are actually where we find the greater part of our character and our growth opportunity. But it was a combination of the bad date and my grudge against perfectionism, and then also I was reading Dry by Augustine Burroughs at the time. And just one of the best books I've ever read in my life. And there was this line that I kept going back to, which is rare. I rarely turn back the pages in a book, but I couldn't get over this line. And it said something to the effect of, I am all flaws stitched together with good intentions. And I just thought that was such an eloquent line, and it really connected, really ignited, and, you know, brought my thoughts together about perfectionism. So Best of Intentions was born, and it's funny, four of my six full-length albums, the title song has been the last song written. I can't speak tonight.
Well, I'm choked up over the bad date, too, so I understand.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, and also the chicken sandwich I had was dry. And,
it was
bad.
Where'd you go?
We went to this place in Old Town Sacramento called Fanny Ann's. I believe we went to Fanny Ann's.
Okay.
Maybe we went somewhere else, but I just remember that it was a very nice guy with a very bad attitude.
Now, where can folks go to learn more about Phil Putnam?
PhilPutnam.com is my official website. And actually, I'll give you a little heads up. There is a free download of my song, I'm No Prize, on the homepage of my website right now. So go get it. Have a blast. And also, a bunch of my music's available on iTunes. As we mentioned, I'm a huge Facebooker. I'm on there 27 hours a day.
Yeah, what are folks missing, Phil, if they don't see your Facebook updates?
I would say they're missing a lot of good snark.
Yeah.
A lot of good insight into my day-to-day life. My deep passion for Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
I saw that today.
Yeah, my current status is a kind of ode to Ben and Jerry's. There's just, you know, and every once in a while I'll put up stuff about my music, but mostly it's about my love for the Gilmore Girls. And my dream, Dakota Fanning was in my dream two nights ago. I had a dream that she had a baby in high school and I was her gay best friend who helped her raise it. So, you know.
Don't you think track four on your next album is going to be called Dakota Fanning's Baby?
Don't you think it already is?
Bonus track, Ben and Jerry staring at me.
When a song plot gets handed down to you like that in a dream, you don't question it.
No, you just don't. You go with it, you get out your iPhone, and you type it up.
Exactly. And when I say that she had the baby in high school, I mean literally in high school. There was pep rally and everything. It was a very odd dream. So, yeah.
I mean, folks who have listened to the show, this is show number 76. Rarely am I speechless, and here we are.
you know, I'm glad that I can bring you a new experience.
Phil Putnam, it is an absolute treat having you on the show. Folks, please go on over to philputnam.com. There's a free download on there. Learn all about Phil and friend him on Facebook, because you're going to learn some stuff. You're going to learn some stuff.
Exactly. Whether or not you wanted to, that's your call.
No, it's not. It's not consensual learning, but you're gonna learn some stuff about life and Phil Putnam.
That's a great phrase, consensual learning.
Track number 7.
Bam.
Awesome. Phil, an absolute treat having you on the show. Keep on writing that music and putting your stuff out there. It is fantastic.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Phil.
Have a good night.
Bye.
It's a big fucking waste of time. Perfection is a thief and a fraud, a cheap attempt to play God. Oh, and I am content to be lost on matters of endless pretension. And I am this collection of flaws, sewn up with the best of intentions. Perfection is an absence of art, an absence of thought and of trust. Oh. On matters of endless pretension, and I am this collection of flaws, sewn up with the best of intentions, sewn up with the best of intentions, sewn up with the best of intentions.
That was Best of Intentions by tonight's guest, Phil Putnam. If you go on a bad date with Phil Putnam, it's going to be a song. And it's going to be a song that's played on this show, so gay. Thanks, Phil, for calling in. A couple other little quick news updates for you all. The U.S. Senate unanimously passed a resolution late yesterday on Tuesday that called on parliament members in Uganda to reject the bill that would impose punishments, including death, on gay people in the African country. According to HRC Backstory, quote, the Senate resolution introduced by Senators Russ Feingold, Tom Coburn, Ben Cardin, and Susan Collins expresses the U.S. government's unequivocal opposition to the proposed Ugandan bill, which is definitely a good thing because, you know, I'm going to Uganda the second week of June, and I don't want to die. So I just want to put that out there. And there was a poll out there this week on 365gay.com that said, do you think that the U.S. should intervene and try to stop on a state level the violence being committed against gays in Uganda? And 73% of folks, including me, said yes. Innocent people are being killed. Someone needs to try to mediate. So good job, U.S. Senate. And we leave you on that positive note. So big thanks to Roadie Coordinator for ALC9, Kim Lembo, for calling into the show. And huge thanks as well to singer-songwriter Phil Putnam. I'm telling you, join his Facebook account. You're going to learn some stuff that, holy cow, enjoy. So get out there, folks. Go do some amazing, amazing things. And remember, above all else, why be gay when you can be
so.
Look at that. That was like a guest appearance. I'll set you up for it. You want me to set you up for it? Why be gay when you can be
so gay.
There you go. Okay. Enjoy, folks. Have a great week.
Because right now you're thinking that I'm quite a thigh. Handsome and witty and real. Well, I can't disagree, my dear, but give us a few. A few more dates and I guarantee that the reasons that you give for wanting me now are the reasons you're gonna flee. I'm your prize. I'm in.